Hey there, this is Chris Cass, Season 2, Episode 9. This episode is about retiring from dating. I've been watching some YouTube videos, and it's some very interesting things, and it looks like that my retirement from dating has resonated a lot on the internet, resonated a lot by both men and women. And I'll go into sort of a little bit of history and a little bit of my decision. And it's not a political decision. It's not an out and about decision. It's just basically, if you boil it down, it's not so much if I were dating women. It's not so much a woman has to compete against other women, or a prospect has to compete against other prospects. It has more to do with a prospect has to compete with my hobbies, with my reading, with my writing, with my working out, with my business, and with my time just doing my own thing, bicycling, going to the cafe, etc. So it's not so much down with women or I'm tired of dating. It has a little bit to do with what my opportunities are and who I have available easily to date. But it more has to do with, honestly, just not having time to prioritize that. It's just not a priority. I'm going to blame it a little bit on low T, low testosterone, which is the best gift I've ever gotten, because it's just not, a loins thing, right? I'm not driven. And also the internet, right? I'm surrounded by beautiful women everywhere, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Tumblr, on the internet. There's never been more access to being able to see what everyone, you know, conceivable looks like. I get to look at people, look at women, and then when I'm done, I'm just done. Anyway, we'll go into all these things in a second after the break. Hey, Chris Abraham here, Chris Cass, Season 2, Episode 9. I feel like I shot my entire load in the introduction, but I don't think there is. Like, I think if I were to think about it and boil it down, which is what I've had to do a little bit before I've started this podcast, is I need to explain a little bit about myself. Firstly, I'm 50 years old. Secondly, I'm extremely obese at the moment. Thirdly, used to be a really hot-looking guy as a young man. It's shocking. I'm shocked that I didn't even have a clue, or maybe I just took it for granted. And I'm happy to say that I've dated, in my opinion, I've dated many beautiful women, and had an opportunity to have multi-year relationships with most of them, with many of them. And I feel like, you know, I feel like retiring. I feel like so let me explain. I'm an only child, which means, and I grew up in Hawaii without any extended family. It was just my mom and dad until maybe 10, 11, or 12, when my dad separated from my mom. And so it was just my mom and me. And even though I had lots of friends and went to an all-boys school, and was part of some clubs and was relatively popular and, took part in sports and stuff like that, I always retreated to wanting to be alone, the antisocial teenager motif. However, I never got over that. I still always retreat, not to a family. I retreat to wanting to be alone. I don't think I've ever invited anybody to hang out in my apartment, outside of when I've been dating people, and that's our apartment. And I don't know, like I also have this very interesting to me, because I only discovered it this year, this interesting brain variability, which is called aphantasia. And aphantasia is the inability to have any at all mind's eye. I was joking with my friend Bob, and he was saying, and I didn't even know that this is actually true, but when people on TV or movies say, are you fantasizing about someone when you're making love to me? Or are you picturing someone? Are you having sex with someone besides me when you're with me? I've never been able to do that. I've never been able to create a visualization of someone else, a better body, a better face, a different person. I've never been able to do that. I've never even understood that that was a thing. Never, never. Every time they've said things like visualize and all these other things, mind palaces, brain palaces, mind castles, I just didn't think they were literal. I didn't think that people literally saw, index cards when they memorized things. You could, look through a book. I thought that only people with photographic memories could do that. I didn't know that people, most people have a sliding scale of various and sundry ways that they can have waking dreams or waking hallucinations, or they can, literally close their eyes and easily visualize an apple or a flame when they're meditating. I have technicolor dreams. I see beautiful color, but when I'm waking, anything like that I experienced, I would consider it to be a hallucination, and I would go to the doctor about it. So I close my eyes, I see black. I close my eyes and look at the sun, I see red. I close my eyes and look at the dark, I see darker black. And so I can't remember something that turns me on. I have to literally visualize. In the same way that I draw, I'm a relatively successful artist, but I can only really, I can draw from memory, but I don't draw from pictures in my mind. There are things in the past that I've drawn over and over again so I can replicate them by rote, sort of like a cartoonist can. A cartoonist can draw Garfield from memory easily. But if I were to want to render your face, I'd probably do a very good job, but I would need to have reference photos, which I thought everybody needed because every time I've seen a popular representation of an artist, he's sitting out in a field or he's looking at a still life, an apple and a pitcher and a flower, or he's looking at a nude model, or he is referencing, or he's someone sitting for a portrait, or someone's referencing a photograph. And so I didn't know that people were oftentimes going into the studio and drawing things from their imagination, unless they were doing something imaginistic, right? If they were doing something imagistic, I assume that they would want references. Maybe that's the way fiction's written. When I say, well, did you visit all the places you wrote about in your story? No, I just used my imagination. What did they do? I don't know. I don't understand it. So, in order to be aroused and turned on and sexualized and passionate, I need to find someone that attracts me. And, you know, I'm not one of these hypergamy people who needs a 24-year-old Victoria's Secret model. No, I mean, I've loved a broad selection of women. But I've always found that particular person the most beautiful person in the world, right? I've always been literally and physically attracted to that person. Yeah, I mean, there's maybe one or two examples of relationships I've had with people that I had to struggle to be into. But I liked them so much, and we had such chemistry, and, you know, that was a small price to pay, but it did reflect in the bedroom. It did reflect in the bedroom. So I thought I had retired from dating back in my early 40s, but a girl pursued me, and we ended up dating for 2 or 3 or 4 years, and that was good. I enjoyed that a lot. It ended up being extremely stressful because it was getting more and more out of sync, you know, what I wanted and what was, and the reality of the relationship weren't on the same page. And so it gave me a lot of anxiety, and a lot of anxiety drives negative behaviors. And so I probably was not the best to live with. And I find that if I just chill out, enjoy my hobbies, whether it's going shooting or riding motorcycles or writing or reading or audiobooks or trying to collect all of my writings onto my chrisabraham.com site, or, you know, even just consuming mass quantities of movies from my Roku box, I love to cook, I love to walk, I love to run, I love to kettlebell, I love to bicycle, and all these things, and I love to sleep. And since I gave up drinking completely in March, I just feel like I had a good run, and I got to taste of many beautiful flowers. And now I just think that I need to decide whether or not, even remotely, even considering dating, is something I want to do, is something that I'm even interested in doing, is something that would, what's the term? Spark joy, right? I don't want to be a disappointment. I don't want to date my mother. I don't want to date your mother. I don't want to date a mother. It sounds selfish, but I think it's actually selfless, because the truth is it's extremely selfless. It would be selfish if I was with somebody and took something from them, but I'm not even putting myself out there onto the market. I don't feel like I'm God's gift, but I'm not God's gift to women. That's for sure. I feel like I always end up being a disappointment, whether it's with regards to money or, I don't know, whatever it is. I just don't feel like I remotely want to be held to any of the standards that are traditional when it comes to upholding a proper partnership. I might be interested in a quasi-platonic partnership, a friend-based relationship, a cohabitation based on that, or just, you know, separate pads, hang out together. Like, I might be really into that, but I don't think I'm interested in the whole cohabitation thing. I don't think I'm interested in, like, the you know, well, I'm allergic to cats, but you get a cat and all this other stuff. The best time I liked that relationship with the girl I dated in my 40s is when we lived in her corporate apartment. She had recently moved out from living. She was separated from her husband, and she took up residence in a little corporate apartment that was totally furnished, and it was in a cool little apartment building, and it was small and cozy, and it was cool, and it was a strange building, and it was up on, I think, something like Arlington Ridge Road or something like that, and there were no cats, there were no dogs, just us. It was a little, it felt like a little honeymoon palace, and I really enjoyed that. And then when it, transitioned into an apartment and ex-husbands and all that other kind of stuff, I was kind of not that interested when it became obvious that that I wasn't, that she was not happy necessarily being in a relationship with me, and she was pining for her ex-husband and all that other kind of stuff. I'm like, yikes. And I definitely started drinking a little bit more and eating a little bit more and being a little bit more of an ass and not trying so hard, which I think is historically a man's way of breaking up with someone without having to break up with them, right? Becoming intolerably objectionable. So that happened. And I don't really want to go through that too many times. I mean, life is too short. Like back 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 2016, 2017, I almost died. So like I'm not really into doing that. And it's not going to change the world. I mean, they're not a bunch of women who would be better off with me being in the dating pool, right? I imprint on the person the so like aside from one girlfriend who I certainly adored, who danced around in front of me until I finally noticed her, because she was little itty bitty, and we dated for years after that, and I really enjoyed her. Every other woman that I've ever dated and fallen deeply in love with, I've imprinted on like a gosling on a goose, on a gosling on a mama goose. My, high school girlfriend Georgina, I saw her and I was besotted. Wendy saw her across the room at an embassy soiree and was like, "I have to know that woman." And when that happens, I will do whatever the universe requires for me to secure her, whatever that means. Unfortunately, when it came to Wendy, she was not, the feelings were not, the feelings might have been mutual, 8 out of 10 points, but those 2 points were pretty important. So yeah, as I said in the first introductory segment, if I were to date again, the person I would be considering would be not competing with other women, would not be competing against other men, would not be competing against anything aside from my hobbies. They would be competing against my just being by myself. And that's a pretty hard thing to compete with, right? That's if you're happy to be alone and you're not, I mean, after the break, we'll talk about this more.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome back. It's episode 9, season 2 of Chris Cast. My name's Chris Abraham. I never realized, there's so many things I didn't realize. First of all, I didn't realize I had aphantasia till I was 50. I didn't realize that I had ADHD until I was, almost 40. All these things I didn't know. And, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, I didn't realize until the global pandemic that people crave, physically, all I can see in my mind's eye, which I don't have, is the life book that I had about human behavior and how they showed a picture of a baby monkey who is so drawn to being loved and cradled and adored by its mother that it would substitute a puppet or even a wireframe for its mother. It so desired companionship and love and people and family and other humans that it would quickly wilt and die if it couldn't have access to lots and lots of people that they could touch and hug and cuddle with. I must be an outlier because I never had that growing up. And the times that I did have it are memorable, but only happened once, right? Like one night we were over at Willow Chang's house in Honolulu, and I was a teenager, and she was a little bit younger, and we were watching maybe Roman Holiday. And there were a bunch of her friends, and we were all in a puppy pile together, snuggling, watching this movie, snuggling, sipping hot cocoa, I guess, and blah, 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 tea. And I called it a puppy pile. And I thought that was a rare thing that they had in Hawaii and that most people had all these, personal space issues. And my narrative was completely wrong because apparently people are cuddled up like hungry for touch monkeys all the time. Am I wrong? Are people in like these clutches of I must be touched monkeys all the time? And if they're separated from their Hey, Google, what is a group of monkeys called?
On the website grammar.yourdictionary.com.
So if, like, you're separated from your troop...
A barrel or troop.
So it's, if you are separated from your troop of monkeys, do you quickly shrivel and die? I guess that's why, like, banishment is actually a real... punishment, right? Banishment is a real punishment, being sent away from your people, your family, your village, and everyone you know. To me, that's called a holiday. That's called traveling. That's called having enough money to get the hell out of here and go somewhere else. Must be extremely traumatic to the friends, the deep friends I've made in the past. I don't mean to leave you in the past. Do I have attachment disorder? Or is it growing up as an only child? Or is it... probably I should just go to a lot of therapy. Like, if I went to a lot of therapy, I might get my mind's eye back. Like, there may be so much trauma that I don't trust anybody. I don't know. But yeah. And the only reason I bring this up is I think that there are a lot of men... around the world, and probably a lot of women who are also deciding to check out and retire from being on the dating market. And people much younger than me, I'm an old fart now at 50, but I don't ever want to date again. I don't ever want to go on a first date. I don't want to ever pick up the tab. I don't want to ever... I pick up tabs of people. If you go on a date with me, It's going to be like to have a conversation and chat and eat cool food and spend time together. And then I'll jump an Uber and go home. I'm never going to go on a date to pick anybody up. It's just, you know, so much issues about breath and plaque and farts and snoring and my BiPAP and body hair and body odor and it's all just awful. That was fine when I was a sweet little thing, but like it's just not appealing to do it anymore. Like, it's not appealing. And it's, you know, not worth the, if it were two people who, if I had the ability to have a intimate romantic partnership with someone who could maintain the level of sanity that two best friends do, you know, without all the damn jealousy and just expectations and disappointments and all these other things, I don't feel any of those things to my friends. I love them unconditionally. And if they fuck me over or accidentally, you know, lash out at me or hurt my feelings, and if they won't talk to me for 5 years or whatever, like, after 5 years, if they come back, that's good. Then we'll work on it from there. We'll probably pick up where we last left off. So, I know this sounds so dark and dour. I don't even think I enjoyed dating when I was dating. You know, people love it. People love the sport of going out there and collecting stories and so forth. But for me, it was always so completely important, right? I would never go on a date to... First of all, I was never the guy who went out there to just get laid or to trick someone into getting, you know, having sex with me or to lead them on. I never meant to. That is not true. I was in a relationship with a woman I feel like I deeply betrayed unintentionally. I was 23, 24, 25, and we lived together and we spent a lot of time together. And she was always dropping hints about, you know, buying a townhouse, you know, all these future plans. And all I did was nod and say, yeah, that would be cool. That would be cool. That would be cool. And it was never that will be cool. Like, I felt that 23, 24, 25 was really young, too young to settle down. I might have different opinions now. I think that if you find the person that you care about, it's never too young, right? I mean, possibly if I could have kept the relationship going with Liz Humphreys, I would have been definitely interested in marrying her way too young. You know, I guess the only two people I really ever wanted to marry, intentionally were, Liz Humphreys and Wendy, you know, Gottlieb. So, aside from that, I think it was just sort of, enjoyed playing house, enjoyed having a lover, enjoyed having a really awesome person. I mean, Michelle Nolan, she was amazing. I mean, I consider her to be my graduate and PhD study in everything. Like, I learned cooking, I learned design, I learned architecture, I learned about, you know, going to movie festivals. She was curious, she had a joie de vivre, she loved to cook, she loved to play act, she had an awesome family. I mean, I loved that time with her. I was scared shit to ask her to marry me. I mean, I didn't know what would happen there. I felt like I was dating the most amazing, delightful, beautiful fragmentation grenade ever. And I was always convinced I didn't ever know what would pull the pin and how everything would explode. So, Oh, I don't know. I will be back after the break.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know if this is worthwhile. My name's Chris Abraham, Season 2, Episode 9, Chris Cast. This was sort of just a ramble. Maybe I'll get my ideas better together. I only bring all this stuff up is because during a Renaissance weekend I met a woman named Lori Gottlieb, L-O-R-I Gottlieb, and she wrote a really interesting book on dating. Hey Google, what book on dating did Lori Gottlieb write?
On the website Amazon.com, they say, good enough. Gottlieb, Lori, 9,780,451,232,168, Amazon.com, books.
Actually, the book is called Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Goodenough. And when she was writing that article, she wrote it for The Atlantic, and she interviewed me, because I think while we're at Renaissance Weekend, she heard me talking about Wendy, the girl I dated, and couldn't figure out why she didn't want to move forward in the relationship. And so, like, she interviewed me. She interviewed me about, you know, about waiting for her, and I was damn good, and she would figure that out. And it was so pathetic, but it was honest. I was completely honest. I sound like an arrogant, entitled white man now, But it was, you know, it was what I was feeling then. Like, and I had many opportunities to, if you can look up that book, and I think it's still called Marry Him, look up that magazine article in The Atlantic by Lori Gottlieb. You'll see there's an article there about some guy, I think she gave me a different name, dating a doctor, and like she wouldn't want to marry me and all this other stuff. And it was extremely thrilling and humiliating to be in the article, because I'd never been mentioned in the Atlantic. It was humiliating because it didn't necessarily paint me well, but it was more thrilling than humiliating. Like I told you, or I must have tweeted somewhere, at the end of the day, being in lights, even if it's humiliating, is better than not being in lights. So, so it was honest, and I had every opportunity to pull out, because as you might or might not know, magazines like The New Yorker and The Atlantic, they have researchers to make sure that everything that is said in the article is verifiable, and so they have verifiers. And so someone called me, and it was very sweet. After she checked all the boxes to make sure that I had said what I had said, she was really sweet. She's like, baby, you deserve so much more. Like, I feel so bad for you, you sweetheart. So that's all I wanted to hear. So it was worth it at that point. And then it was thrilling to see the article. You can, I think you can find it on my, if you go to chrisabraham.com, let me remind myself to transport it over there. Add Marry Him article. Article to CA.com. All right. So, I don't know. I mean, I hate to think that the entire, you know, probably one of my ex-girlfriends, Puff, will read, listen to this and be like, oh, Psychology 101, and I know that I'm completely Psychology 101. It's probably mom issues, probably the fact that my mother said, I shouldn't have married your father, I should have married for money, or I should have gone with my girlfriend to move to San Francisco. I married for love, and he was, he had potential, but he never lived up to it. And the other men that I dated were rich, and I never loved them, but they would have been good fathers and husbands and providers. I mean, that's such an old trope, right? And then I heard my mom say, I shouldn't have married at all. And one of my biggest go-tos whenever my parents would give me lip is, I didn't ask you to have me. I mean, I think all y'all would have been better off if you didn't. Zing. But, that's deeper psychology than I want to admit, in that, I probably just want to be held and to be loved and to be suckled and nursed because my mom didn't nurse me. Oh, poor Chris. But actually, I'll tell you something. I have quite an amusing life, and I fit everything I want to do in. And during the pandemic, it's been a no problem, right? I haven't suffered from deep ennui and crippling psychosis, which I guess is good, but maybe when the pandemic is over, maybe I'll make a point of physically going places and seeing people and trying to maybe kick up the joy boy Chris from the late from his I was a joy boy from my late 20s until my late 30s. I was a definitely a, there were 10 years when I was a complete joy boy. I think I made all my best friendships and all my best relationships when I was a complete joy boy. So maybe there's some joy boy left in me, Uncle Chris, joy boy extraordinaire. All right, after this, I'd love to hear all your feedback. I don't know if anybody listens to these, but they amuse me. When we come back, I'll give you all the ways you can contact me. All right. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Season 2, Episode 9, Chris Cast. My name's Chris Abraham. And Cry Me a River. Hey Google, can you play Cry Me a River?
Cry Me a River by Justin Timberlake, sure. Playing on YouTube Music.
I don't know that song. Hey Google, what songs are named Cry Me a River?
Jazz ballad. According to Wikipedia, a bluesy
Hey
jazz
Google,
ballad.
play Cry Me a River by Ella Fitzgerald.
Cry Me a River by Ella Fitzgerald. Sure. Playing on YouTube Music.
Only Invisalign treatment uses smart track technology, so I could create custom treatment plans for every smile.
Cry me a river, I cried a river over you. Now you say you're sorry for being so untrue. Well, you can cry me a river, cry me a river, 'cause I cried a river over you. You nearly drove me out of my head. Why, you never shed a tear. I remember all that you said. Told me love was too plebeian. Told me you were through with me. And now you say you love me. Well, just to prove you do, come on and cry me a river. Cry me a river, 'cause I cry a river over you. You nearly drove me out of my head. Why, you never shed a tear. Remember all that you said. Told me love was too plebeian. Told me you were through with me. And now you say you love me. Well, just to prove you do, come on and cry me a river. Cry me a river, 'cause I had cried a river all over you. If my pillow could talk, imagine what it would have said. 'Twould be a river of tears. I cried instead. So you can cry me a river. Daddy, go ahead and cry that river. 'Cause I cried how I cried a little river over you. How I cried a river over you.
Oh, Ella Fitzgerald. Oh, so good. We'll be back right after the break. Hey there, Chris Cast, Chris Abraham here. Season 2, Episode 9, Cry Me a River is going to be the title of this episode, I think. You can reach me at chrisabraham.com. You can email me at chris@abraham.su. You can find me at Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook at Chris Abraham. You can give me money at anchor.fm/Chris Abraham/support. You can make comments, I think, at anchor.fm/Chris Abraham/feedback, or just go to anchor.fm/Chris Abraham and all the stuff will be there for you. You can find me on Stitcher and iHeartRadio and TuneIn and and all the other places, including Apple Podcasts. If you go to those places or listen from there, including Spotify, if you would be willing to like, thumbs up, comment, review, give me 12 stars, 5 stars, all the stars, I think that would really help grow the podcast. However, if you think that this is completely the self-indulgent ramblings that aren't interesting at all to anybody but himself, then you'll realize why this podcast exists. This is just an audio diary for me to capture the zeitgeist of my particular self and the world around me, seen through my eyes and heard through my ears, through my various and sundry filters and my various and sundry analyses, and then vomited to you using word thoughts vocally into my favorite Sony, which is this Sony. Let me give a shout out to, I am the only person who doesn't have fancy USB mics and mixer boards and stuff. All I use is my fancy IC recorder, ICD-UX570 from Sony Corp. Fabriqué en Chine. Just for your information, this device complies with Part 15 of the FCC rules. Operation is subject to the following two conditions. This device may not cause harmful interference, and this device must accept any interference received, including interference that may cause undesired operations. Amen. Okay, guys, what else? If you want to text me or find me on Telegram or find me on WhatsApp or find me on what is the name of that? On Signal, you can plug in +1 202 352 5051 into there. 202 352 5051, +1, which is the United States and Canada. 202 352 5051. If you try to call that number, I probably won't answer unless you're super awesome and the caller ID tells me who you are. Otherwise, you can schedule a date with me at calendly.com/ChrisAbraham/15, and then we can have a proper chat. On that note, it is currently 24 degrees Fahrenheit. Hey, Google, how many degrees centigrade is it?
100 degrees.
On the website, Google, how many degrees is in Celsius is 24 degrees Fahrenheit?
-4.44 degrees Celsius.
-4.44.
They say 24 degrees.
Hey, Google, stop. That was fun, guys. I hope you don't regret listening to this one. On that note, I really appreciate your time, your energy, your perseverance, your tolerance, your laughter, your tears, and I'll talk to you soon. As they say in certain parts of Berlin, tschüssi, or other parts of Berlin, tschüss, or Germany, tschüss, or Germany, auf Wiedersehen, or El Salvador, hasta la próxima, or ciao, or a bientôt, en France, à Paris, à tout à l'heure, ciao, au revoir. Bye-bye.